You're listening to the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
Hello! That music means we have returned. This is season two of the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast. My name is Steve Holden and it feels so good to be back, right? It only seems like yesterday that Kalush Orchestra won in Turin for Ukraine. And loads, as you know, has happened since. The UK is going to be hosting on Ukraine's behalf. Liverpool beat six other British cities to host the contest. We've got three countries who've already announced who they're sending next year: the Netherlands, Cyprus, and Israel. And Junior Eurovision is just around the corner. It's going to take place in Yerevan in Armenia in December. As for the Eurovision Song Contest, the grand final is on May the 13th, 2023. And you know what? It is going to be on us so quickly. And we have got so much to cover before then, including national final season. And my aim, as with season one of this podcast, is to get every single participant on here before the semi-finals begin. But for this first episode, I did something a little bit different because I've been on a tour this year. I have been traveling round Europe by train and I saw it as the perfect opportunity to drop in on some familiar Eurovision names of recent years. So, coming up on episode one. Serbia's Constructor on being recognised everywhere.
Even if I put my glasses and put the hat and I put the face mask on, even then people recognize me. So I cannot.
Yeah, they see the eyes.
It's in the eyes.
A heart-to-heart with Germany's Malik Harris on how to be positive after coming last.
Everything changed and it was all perfect because of that. And so many people around the world kind of told me that they could relate with what I was saying on stage and everything. And so I feel like if I didn't finish last, I wouldn't have had that kind of feedback in a way.
Who made Stefania from Greece do this?
I'm like watching her and I'm like, damn girl, where did you get those moves? Wow.
And how things could have been a lot different for Austria's Cesar Sampson.
I almost would have represented the UK with Nobody But You in 2018. It was just that Austria was first.
If you want the latest episode of the Eurovision Song Contest podcast as soon as it drops, then subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to start in the Serbian capital, Belgrade, and I think you'd all agree that Constructor's performance in Turin this year was iconic. I know that word is used a lot these days, but In Corpore Sono made an impact. It had striking lyrics, it was a visual feast, and Constructor is now this global hand-washing icon. And it obviously resonated with the audience because it came fourth in the televote and fifth overall, giving Serbia one of its best results in years. Now, I met up with Constructor and her friend Costa, who's one of her on-screen towel-throwing crew members. At the beginning of the year, they entered Serbia's national final competition with no expectation. And now, all these months later, any Eurovision fan will know exactly what you mean when you say Biti Strava. So I'm now in Belgrade and I'm sat in a very quiet gallery in the centre of the city with the person who came fifth at this year's Eurovision Song Contest, Constructor. Hello.
Hello.
What has life been for you the last couple of months?
Hilarious. It was interesting. It was fun. It was fun. Many, many things happened. It was intensive as well because we had so much concerts playing all around. Certainly, it opened a door to a wider public here. And we got some attention from the audience from Europe.
You made your mark on Eurovision through your performance, through the song. When you went to Turin, did you put any expectation on yourself about how you might do?
I was suspicious about our performance because it was a bit different. It's not so common to have such a performance in Eurovision. So I was like, whether we are at the right place. But in the end, I think that we were at the right place because we got recognized from many people there and our performance was well understood.
One thing that I remember being in the audience at one point is just how loud the crowd was when they started clapping in your song. What was it like for you sat there in the middle of it all, looking out and hearing that?
It was surprising. I know that Eurovision audience is very, very, very intense, yeah? But I haven't expected this kind of support. It was really loud, maybe the loudest support at this semifinals. Later in finals, it was maybe less, but it was surprising for us, for all of us. You know, at the moment, I couldn't hear myself singing.
You couldn't hear it because of the noise of the audience?
Yeah. They were clapping with us. In chorus, we have this Biti Zdrava and we clap our hands. So the whole arena was clapping hands and I cannot hear myself. But it was nice.
So sitting next to you is somebody who was on stage with you. Hi, Costa.
Hi.
For people that think back to Constructor's performance, if you're looking at it, you were the guy on the right jumping up and down
with the towel. Exactly, yeah.
Did you feel the same as Constructor when you were in the audience? What was it like?
Well, for me, because I'm not somebody who is generally on the stage, so for me that was an experience on its own, but when we started having the first rehearsals with the audience and when the actually like 15,000-16,000 people starts clapping at the same time, I get literally the chills and my knees start shaking behind the skirt. But the thing is that you have to keep this serious face of the song, you know, and you cannot look on the sides.
Did you find it surreal being at Eurovision?
Yes, I do. I mean, it's because I never expected it. Maybe I last year when the Hurricane was there, because they're like, I cannot say friends, but like we know each other from the city and from high school. So I was looking at their videos and I was like, how much fun they have, you know, and because they're really popular here as well. They were really followed by media much more than when we were there. So I was just looking how much fun they have, but I could never imagine that next year. I mean, I didn't even think about it because I don't sing, I'm not a performer or anything. So when everything happened, I was surprised. But it was nice, yeah.
How were you received in Serbia?
This Incorpore Sano and Constructor thing here in Serbia is a kind of phenomenal social phenomenon, because it went through every layer of society, you know. Everybody knew the song, and they started to analyze, not this song, but this song is a part of a greater video called Triptych. This Triptych is a video consisted of three songs. So they started to analyze that, you know, to discuss about it. There were many, many memes, many GIFs, many... I was in media, I think, for 2 months. Every single newspaper had something about me, you know. So it was really a great, great phenomenon. Yeah?
But it was interesting, in the beginning, because of the lyrics and the lyrics of the other song, they started giving the meaning to everything she does. Like, everything she does is in a purpose. But I think it was just the collective mind of Serbia was ready for something fresh. But I think people were not ready, but it was unexpected for them, so they really caught on it, and they needed. I think the people here needed something like this. That's why they started analyzing the other songs and every move and everything. Yeah.
Nobody expected this kind of artistic performance to be accepted and to be sent to Eurovision. You know, so somehow it was like a diversion. Mm.
Did lots of people start stopping you in the street and wanting to have your picture? Like, did you come back and suddenly everyone knows you?
Yes, but everyone, everywhere. And somehow I catch myself, I'm going to the shopping mall as usual, you know, but I forgot that I'm Constructor, you know, and then I enter the shopping mall and it's, Constructor! So go back. Run. But it's nice. Now, 5 months, 6 months later, it's more normal, if I can say. I can sit in the city center and drink coffee and nobody...
But people still react.
Yeah, they react. They're looking at me. they want to take a picture, they want to take a part of an idol with them, but it's okay, it's nice. There was still this period where we wore masks, and it was cold. And even if I put my glasses and put the hat and I put the face mask on, even then people recognize me, so I cannot.
Yeah, they see the eyes.
Yeah, it's in the eyes.
Did lots of people come up to you clapping and saying Bitti Strava?
Yeah, many, many. Some of them want to philosophize with me, you know, to make some philosophical conversation. Some of them just want to give me, many people want to give me something. That's the phenomenon. On the concerts, I receive a lot of presents.
What kind of presents?
Mostly bras, yes, but there are different kind of some. I got insurance card on
Croatia,
one.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Croatia. I also got alcohol because there is a poem that I where I say I have wine, and I'm going to drink wine this evening because I'm
in my 40s. And I'm facing
you know, this getting old. Mm-hmm. So people bring me wine. People give me sweets. People give me poems. People give me
letters. A lot of letters.
Yes.
Wow. In the bar, there was a bar next, close to her house. We were going to a concert, and they're like, "Oh, you're going to see Construct." I was like, "Yeah, sure. This is a letter for her." Like, and then, like, a letter from a kid.
Yeah. And they want to say that they are thankful. Lots of sunglasses also. Yeah.
Any towels?
Yeah, there were some, but we give the towels. Yeah. We are the one who give towels to the audience. Also, when I come to bakery or when I come to restaurant, they want to give me a supper. They want to give me croissants. They want to give me coffee. Now that I have money, they want to give me everything, but I accept.
It sounds like it's been amazing, really, if you kind of take yourself out of it. I know, obviously, you want to go down the street without being stopped all the time, but you've obviously made Serbia proud.
In a way, yes. When it was Eurovision time, there was really a great support from people here. It was like Eurovision was a World Cup of football or something, you know, everybody were there.
But I think it's also interesting, I don't know for you, but for me, I never felt this support in general from Serbia in anything I do. My fear was that we're not going to be supported and we're going to be like object of laughs. And I remember when we were going for national competition, I told to my mom that we are going to performance. She was like looking at me, looking at her. She was like, "You too. Good luck."
You too. Good luck.
Yeah. Because she knows. I mean, where we are. Like, she's supportive, very supportive. But she was just like, she's a very rough mom.
Did you have fun at Eurovision when you weren't concentrating on stage? Like, was there a good team atmosphere?
Yeah, it was. We are friends. Before everything, we were friends also. So this was a good team for us. And also we were, you know, when you're at Eurovision, you have to prepare everything in advance. So when you go there, you're already prepared. You just have to do your thing. No tension for us, at least. It was fun.
Some people would have seen this video. It's you and a load of school children in Serbia. They know every single word of Incorporasono. Where was that and how was that?
So yes, the video you're talking about is when I went to elementary school and I was performing because there was some exhibition and I was performing and there were a lot of kids, but it was like Beatles coming somewhere, you know, they were crowded, going upside down, you know, wanted to touch me or anything.
We should say you won an award as well at Eurovision, the Marcel Bezosson Artistic Award, and that's given to the performance that people feel is the poetry on stage, like the most artistic on stage. That must have felt good to be acknowledged for that as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's what interests me. I think we do things, we want to say something, we want to discuss things, and that was recognized as an artistic performance, and that's suitable for this. For this kind of award is suitable for this kind of performance.
What's the most surreal thing to have happened to you both since Eurovision?
Everything is surreal. Even now is still surreal, you know. But starting from being at Eurovision, I remember that before we go to the stage and sit on that chair, you know, in this backstage, we are like, are we on Eurovision? What is happening? You know, I was always asking, is this real?
And my final question, this is a podcast, but how many people do the... I'm currently like waving my arms around my face, but you know, it's part of your act. Do people do that to you still, or did they?
Yeah, they do, and they called me umetnica, which means artist in Serbia, because this constructa thing is pretty hard to pronounce. So here we have many variations of this name, like cantata, cataracta, comprosta, constricta, constatata, everything you can imagine.
But there's only one constructa.
There's only one. Yeah.
Honestly, such a pleasure to meet Constracta in her home city of Belgrade. You can check out the full triptych that she was talking about on YouTube, along with loads of her other music videos. Now, at the contest this year, I got to meet the acts and see firsthand just how much time and effort they had put into their performances. Months of work for those 3 minutes on stage. One person who did just that was Germany's Malik Harris. He was great to meet. Loads of energy, personality, so friendly. So it was hard to see him come last at the contest this year. It's one of those situations, isn't it? No one deserves to come last, but unfortunately, somebody has to. It's the nature of the competition. So to find out a bit more about what has happened since and how he's doing, I travelled to Munich, his home city in Germany. I took a bus to the outskirts of the city, dropped in on Malik at his studio, which is full of instruments, full of Marvel photos, and obviously the inspiration behind his performance. So I'm in a studio outside of Munich, and it kind of looks familiar because it is the studio of Malik Harris, whose set at Eurovision was based on the room that I'm in, and he is here right now. How's it going?
Hey, pretty good. How are you? Good to see you.
Yeah, yeah, you too. I mean, what a crazy couple of months. Thank you for letting us into the studio. This is the place. This is your home.
This is my home, exactly. And that's also why I really wanted to bring this place to Eurovision, because this is like, I kind of live here as well. I'm sitting on the couch that I sleep on. And so I wake up every morning and I see this place, this very room where all my ideas, all of my thoughts that have anything to do with music just like kind of appear to me. And so, yeah, for me, it's still like a magical place in a way.
How much time do you spend here?
When I'm not touring, I'm here all the time, actually, because this is, you know, we got a kitchen right next door and I got everything that I need in here, except for a shower, actually. But a friend of mine lives nearby, so I can take a shower at her place. And so I'm just here all the time because, you know, there's nothing better for me than to just like wake up in the morning and see like all these instruments around me, and just knowing that as soon as an idea pops up in my head, I can just like kind of turn it into reality. That's so beautiful to me.
How have things been since the contest?
Absolutely insane. It's been so wicked. I mean, right after Eurovision, I flew from Turin to Hamburg to play the first show of my tour. So from Eurovision, it just kind of went on, just like playing every night. The tour went on for like 2 weeks or something like that. Every show was sold out, so every night was like absolutely magic. And from the tour, I went straight to like festival summer, you know. And I just played a show yesterday in front of 20,000 people, right, like 1 hour from here or something like that. And so since Eurovision, it's just been absolutely crazy, playing my head off, and I love every single second of it.
What do you remember of the night? Is it all a whirlwind, or is there one thing that you can pick out from that night?
I can actually remember quite a lot, because, you know, Rockstar is the song that I performed. It's about being in the moment and not like letting things pass by. And it's like, you know, as humans kind of tend to see the good things when they're over and when we're looking back at them. So the song is about like focusing on the moment and like taking everything in while it is happening. And so every time I sing the song and I perform it, it reminds me of that thing. And so especially the 3 minutes on stage, they're still so perfectly in my head. I can kind of remember every second of it, and I can still remember the whole power in the building. And I can also remember, because that was like very tense, me sitting on the piano, and you know, it's like it all calms down right before the song, and then there's like this timer, these red numbers going down, 10, 9, 8, and that was like a moment for me that was a little shocking in a way. Yeah.
That was when the heart was beating.
Exactly, you can hear it beating, because normally before shows I'm pretty chilled, you know. I don't get too nervous. I get excited because I love doing it. But that was a point where I saw this countdown going down. I was like, okay, it's kicking in. It's kicking in.
Finally.
Yeah, definitely.
The months of work had happened. Have you watched the performance back?
I have, actually. Okay. Yes. And it was,
some people don't.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it took a while for me because I didn't think about it. But then I was like, you know what, you should just check it out, see how it was. And it was funny to me because the song, it's kind of it has this melancholic, sad vibe. But when I was performing it, I was so much in the moment and, you know, like enjoying being on the stage and having these people around me and everything, that for almost the whole performance, I was just smiling all the time. And that like gave me, like it made it clear for me that I was really in the moment and enjoying it. And so watching it for me was like, yeah, reliving the moment again and really enjoying it once again for me.
So now that we're a couple of months out of the contest, how do you feel about the results?
Oh, I mean, the results for me, I mean, I finished last, of course, but I still feel like it was, for me, it was actually perfect in a way, because so many people came back and watched the performance, because I feel like most of the people who maybe don't watch too much Eurovision, they watch like who was first, who was second or third, and then they're like who was last, who finished last. And so I got so much feedback from all around the world with people who said like, why did you finish last? I could really relate to the song, I could relate to the performance and everything. And so, you know, at first I was like a little disappointed, but right after that I just checked out and got all this feedback from all around the world, and it was so beautiful to me. And there are so many, you know, so many more fans who could relate with my thoughts and everything. And so looking back, I'm still super glad about everything that happened.
Did you have a good team around you to give you support after the results had come through? Was the German delegation there for you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we had a blast. I mean, you can tell if you watch the video, we were just having fun. We were having a great night. And we were all so happy because we gave it our best, you know. And as my mom always said, you cannot do anything more than just give it your best. If you give it your best, there's nothing more you can do. And we all did that for sure. There's so much work and so many hours and months of practicing, of working together. And we really kind of grew together as a family in a way. And so having that night, it was like just celebrating what happened, and also celebrating that Ukraine won, of course, because we were hoping and rooting for that as like a signal to the world in a way, and that happened as well. So the point that Kalush Orchestra won, that was like, for us, it felt like we won in a way. We just like super celebrating and everything. So it was a beautiful night for sure.
What just describe, what's it like after the contest finishes, in those hours, in the early hours after Ukraine have won? Did you go back to your dressing room? Do you have to pack up? Like,
I was a little drunk, actually, but I can actually remember because, we were like, after the show ended, we were still in the green room for a while, just chilling with the other artists, because in a way there was like this kind of a melancholic vibe, because you knew that now you are not going to see each other again. You know, all these artists are going to go back to, I don't know, to their countries and on tour and everything. So that was like, we were all just crying and hugging each other. But it was beautiful in a way as well, because I realized once again that I gained a lot of new friends in this whole Eurovision world, which was beautiful to me. And so after being in the green room, we kind of all went back to the dressing rooms, packed up our stuff. I forgot like everything. So thankfully my team just like brought something back for me. And which was, one thing was crazy, because the loop station that I had on stage, that's my loop station. That's the one I use on tour. So I forgot it on stage, of course. And if I didn't have it on the flight on the next day, I couldn't have played my tour, you know? And so thankfully Nando, part of my team, member of my team, he was like, he kind of thought of it, and he ran back to the stage long after I even left the venue, and he brought it back. So thanks, Nando.
So you left the venue and you're still there?
Yeah, I left the venue and he kind of went back or something. I don't even know because I didn't leave with him. But like at night, he came back and knocked on my hotel door and he was like, "You forgot your loop station, man." I was like, "Oh my God."
And for anyone who doesn't know what a loop station is, that is integral to your whole performance, isn't it?
That's the whole brain of everything. Yeah, without it, I can't play.
So no regrets from Eurovision?
Oh, no single one. Definitely. I mean, it's funny because people ask me that all the time, especially with like the fact that I finished last. But I say every time I say, even with the fact that I finished last, I would do everything exactly the same in a heartbeat. Definitely.
I mean, Rosa Lynn's a really good example right now. You know, she came 20th, 21st and Snap's like blowing up. I don't think this year, with this year's, let's call it the class of 2022, I just got the vibe that everybody was there because they wanted to show what they were about. And I didn't get that feeling of competition too much this year. I mean, I don't know if everyone was just pretending, but it really felt like people just wanted to perform.
Exactly. And I mean, it's a perfect phrase, the class of 22, because I always felt like we were on a school trip in a way with friends, and it was no competition whatsoever, especially since, you know, the whole situation was a bit different with the political situation and what's happening in Ukraine. And so with that itself, we were all like rooting for Ukraine altogether. But apart from that, it was also like everyone, as you said, everyone just wrote a song that meant a lot to them. And we were all happy to get the opportunity to play our song and to share our feelings on that kind of stage. And so, yeah, it was just like a school trip with friends in a way.
When I spoke to you earlier this year, you said about how your dad was in tears when you got chosen for Germany. What was he like when you performed at Eurovision?
He was exactly the same, actually. And I think I heard him while I was performing. I think I heard him, yeah. I know it sounds crazy because there are thousands of people there. But my dad, when he gets very excited, he kind of has this, I don't even know what to call it. It's like such a powerful, deep, raspy voice. And I kind of heard that kind of scream from my right-hand side. And I know that they were sitting on my right-hand side. So I'm pretty sure that was my dad. And he was super proud. I mean, we all kind of partied together afterwards. And yeah, it's so, you know, for me as a family man, it's so great to have my family always with me. My mom was there, my dad was there, and my brother was there. And they were all so proud. And I can tear up right now because it's so cool to make your parents and your family proud with your music. It's so beautiful to me.
I love that you could hear him. Yeah, I love that you could hear him, right? On stage.
It's crazy, yeah, definitely.
And he probably knew what he was doing as well. You know, he could probably feel the pride from across the arena.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah, I could really feel it in my whole body. It was just, you know, it's so cool to have people there who are like unconditionally there for you and who support you in every step that you take. And with every failure and whatever, they're just there for you. And like hearing him on the right-hand side in that moment, yeah, I can't describe it. It was everything.
What's the one thing you learned about yourself from the Eurovision Song Contest?
I learned about myself that I think that it's life and everything around it. Sometimes it's very funny because sometimes things that seem like they're bad in a way, or seem like, you know, sometimes you feel like you failed, you've taken the wrong exit in a way. For me, it was like finishing last. In the first moment, it was like, oh no, I failed or something like that. But in the next moment, and that's kind of life, and that's kind of the lesson I learned, everything changed and it was all perfect because of that. Because I finished last, so many people kind of listened to the song, checked out my performance, and so many people around the world kind of told me that they could relate with what I was saying on stage and everything. And so I feel like if I didn't finish last, I wouldn't have had that kind of feedback in a way. And so, yeah, I kind of learned that sometimes things that at first seem like they're bad or not good for you, in a way they can turn out to be great and turn out to be the things that you look back at and smile with your whole heart.
Malik Harris, you were amazing. Thank you so much for like showing us around, and you know, keep doing what you're doing.
I will. Thank you so much for having me, man.
You're listening to the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
I think Malik is such a great example of someone who sees the benefit of the Eurovision Song Contest. Positivity is such a good thing, isn't it? I mean, since Eurovision, he's released another single called You and I. You can find it on all streaming platforms, so please go check it out. Go and support your local Eurovision artists. Now, next up was a visit to the Dutch city of Utrecht. It's where Stefania lives. She represented Greece in 2021 with Last Dance and was one of the acts who was originally picked for the 2020 contest and came back the following year after it was cancelled. She's also one of the few people in this world to have done the Eurovision Song Contest and also Junior Eurovision. Hello to Stefania in your hometown of Utrecht. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm really, really good. It's good to see you. This is where you live. Yeah. It's a bit rainy today, though.
It's like going outside and just think that you're having a really good day. And then you see all the rain and you're like, oh my God, where's the summer?
I'm kind of thinking where to start. And I think we should just maybe just go back to Rotterdam, because 10 was a special number for you that year. You were 10th in the running order. You came 10th. It's 18 months ago. When you look back on that performance, what immediately comes to mind?
I learned like to sing better, to perform better, to listen better to other people, their ideas, to not only think about my ideas, just to work together also better. To be also more mature also, because I'm still a kid in my mind. But
I think everyone is still a kid in their mind. They were like younger than they were. Let's talk about Last Dance, because the question that I've been like longing to ask you is, you probably had the most technically difficult performance, right? Yeah. You had a lot to remember and you also had to rely on other people getting stuff right.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? What was that like?
It was so, I don't know. It was very like, we wanted to do everything perfect. So at the rehearsals, if one dancer was too late, we all were like stressing out, because we thought like Nikos was most of the time he was too late.
That's one of your dancers.
Yeah. And he was like, I'm sorry. We were like, no, get on it, go. And we were like stressing out that time. So very fun also to do everything exactly like how Fokas, the choreographer, wanted everything to be. It was actually very fun. It was also a little bit of something dangerous, because if something went wrong live, we can do anything about it. Like, it was really fun to do something with green screen. I think never earlier in Eurovision, I think it never happened before.
Not to the extent that you did it.
So that's why we also thought it was very special. And that's also why we thought we need to do it perfectly. So, yeah, the stress was here, like, really high.
I rewatched it recently, and you realise that every edit and your every step has to fit in to everything else, you know? And if one thing slightly goes wrong, then everything would fall like a house of cards. But it didn't.
Well, a little bit. The part where they were holding me, you know, where I was on the... Where I was on the stairs, I needed to go down, and they were lifting me down, but it went a little bit wrong. So, yeah, I just really stressed out that time. And then was also like...
Was that in the final?
Yeah, that was in the final. You can clearly see that I'm like not going straight down. I'm really like...
Only if you know that happened, would you notice it?
Yeah, I know, but because we, you know, practiced like a year for that, and... We just really saw that it went wrong that little bit. So it was like, oh my God, why? But people don't see it, as you say it. People don't see it, but we were really stressed out because we saw it and we were like, oh no, there goes our points.
But they didn't, because you came 10th. You came in the top 10.
Yeah,
this is good.
That was really our goal, to be in the top 10.
And it's funny, when you're watching, I was there in the arena, it was so funny watching you and Greece, because essentially it's just green everywhere. It's the biggest difference between watching it at home and watching it in the arena, you know? But it's just so much green. You're probably dreaming of green all the time.
Yeah, but it's also really funny, because the audience after the show, they were coming to me and they were telling like, oh my God, it was so funny to see it like live, because it was all green and nothing happened. And So yeah, that's really, I don't know, really funny actually. We also saw a lot of videos on YouTube, people filming from the crowd, and you saw that everything was green and the people were screaming because everybody thought it was so cool.
Yeah.
So that's really funny, yeah.
What was it like after Eurovision?
After my performance, I really was so excited and I really wanted to go all around the world to travel and to like sing and to perform for people. But they were telling me, okay, Stefania, slow down, wait a minute. We first need to go back to Greece. And I was like, okay, let's go back to Greece. And then we went back to Greece and it was like crazy. Everybody went crazy because Greece was a lot of years not in the top 10. And we went back in the top 10 and they were all like, I don't know, hugging me, kissing me. They're all like, oh my God, we love you so much. And that was really nice. And after that, I really went on a vacation just to have a little bit of a
chill out.
Yeah, because it was such a lot for me. And I was just only 18 years old. And my sister was telling me, you need to get a little bit rest. Let's go to Greece. Was not a great idea, actually.
Why?
Because we went, yeah, because it was like 2 weeks after Eurovision. So everybody in Crete, we were in Crete. Everybody there was like screaming, Stefania, oh my God, you're here. And I was like, oh no. And it went all over the news, like, newspapers who were telling like Stefania is in Crete on vacation with her sister, and I was like, oh no.
All you wanted was a nice relaxing holiday on the beach, you know, and it was not.
No, it was a little bit, but I was when we went to the city, it was crazy, so we only stayed in our village.
What was it like after Eurovision? What doors did Eurovision open for you?
I'm presenting shows right now, so that door is opened for me.
Yeah, because you've just presented the Junior Eurovision Selection Show here in Holland. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was crazy. I loved it so much. The show was amazing. Luna, the girl who is participating in the Netherlands right now, she is actually so cute and her song is so good.
You participated for Junior Eurovision for the Netherlands in 2016. So it's like everything kind of went full circle.
Yeah.
So you participated, then you were helping host it, and you had Eurovision as well. It's like you've done everything.
I'm just a Eurovision girl, I guess. Like, yeah, my whole life is from Eurovision.
That's not a bad place to be, to be honest.
No, I love Eurovision. Actually, I also love Junior Eurovision. But the Junior Eurovision Song Contest was like more chill, laid back, because we were just kids. You know, at Eurovision, it was really like, oh, everything was serious. The interview was serious. The show was serious. Everything was like, needs to be perfect. And at Junior Eurovision, if something went wrong, they were like, ah, forget it. I think watching back Junior Eurovision, I was not nervous because I was with two other girls and we were like making each other stronger back then. So
the band was Kisses, wasn't it?
Yeah, Kisses. Every time I watch it back, I feel like, oh, that was such a great experience. And we were like best friends.
Nice.
I'm still talking to them, though. So it's not that we have a fight. People think that we have a fight, but it's not. And watching back Eurovision, I can only remember the stress I had. Like, seriously, like, everything needs to be perfect. I love my outfit at the Eurovision Song Contest. I'm still obsessed with it. You still got it? Yeah, I still have it. When I'm older and I have kids, I can like show my kids like, look what mommy did. Yeah, so yeah, I think Eurovision was a great experience for me, also for my career.
If people are in the Netherlands right now, they will know that you are in a film at the minute.
Yeah.
Your first film, right?
It's not my first film, but it's first time I'm like the main character.
The lead.
Yeah, the lead.
Tell everybody, what's the name of the film?
Misfit the Switch.
And it's a dance movie, kind of.
It's like a little bit. Do you know Step Up?
Yes.
It's exactly like that, but for teenagers.
Ah, amazing. And did you have fun making it?
It was such a great experience. My dance skills are actually better after the movie, so that's also great for performance. And it was also really hard working. That's also true.
Well, it seems like you do like hard work.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, but I need to have a weekend off. Like,
everyone needs weekends off.
I loved work, but 2 days off.
You're in quite a good position because you have the choice in the future, if you wanted to, of participating for Greece or for the Netherlands, you know, if it was to ever come again. You know, that's better than a lot of people, you know?
Yeah, Yeah, everybody is also asking me the question, if you want to, you know, participate for the Netherlands, would you do that? And I'm like, yeah, of course. But also I'm thinking like, yeah, would Greece be happy about that? So, but actually I'm hoping that Greece is coming to me after 4 years and asking me again for Eurovision. I would really love to go again.
But maybe not with as complicated a routine next time.
I hope not, because it was so complicated.
What did you think of this year's contest? Obviously the winning song is named after you.
Yeah, I know, but I love that song. I was very happy when they won, you know, the final. I was actually screaming like, yeah, because it's such a great song. On Instagram, they were like making all those memes with Stefania's going back to Eurovision. And I'm like, huh? What's up? What's going on? So I checked like Ukraine, their song, and it was called Stefania. So I was really like, wow, okay. But I love the song. I love the meaning of the song also. And I also really liked, which country are we like? We have, Spain. Yeah, Spain.
Chanel.
Chanel, she's like a queen, period. She is the queen. I'm like watching her and I'm like, damn, girl, where did you get those moves? Wow. Like, I was like...
Where were you watching it? At home?
No, I was watching it in Greece, actually, okay. Because I needed to give the points, the 12 points from Greece.
Of course you did.
So I was watching live with the whole crew backstage, and it was really a nice experience to watch that live with them.
One final question. Do you think that you would ever do your own cover of Stefania? So then you've got Stefania by Stefania.
Whoa.
You should do, like, just a little cover. Like, all the fans would love it.
Yeah? Would they love it?
Of course they would. You could make the meme reality.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Maybe. I don't know.
Just for a bit of fun, you know.
Yeah.
But look, we will look forward to seeing what you get up to. And who knows, you may be back there representing Greece again.
I hope so much that I'm going back to Eurovision. It's such a great experience. And I will recommend it to everybody. Like, if you want to go to Eurovision, just go for it, because it's such a great experience.
Stefania, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
Let's see how the Netherlands does in junior this year. And that film that Stefania was talking about is called Misfit, The Switch. Now, the final stop of my European Eurovision travel was to Vienna in Austria to meet up with one of the country's most successful Eurovision acts, Cesar Sampson. He came third for his country back in 2018. That's a position only bettered by the two times that Austria won. So Udo Jürgens in 1966 and, of course, Conchita in 2014. Now, he met me on his prized scooter. And what do you do when you're in Vienna? You have a coffee, of course. Now, Cesar won the jury vote with his song Nobody But You. And he's got a very long history with Eurovision. Cesar Sampson, hello.
Hey, Steve, nice to have you. Welcome to Vienna.
Oh, no, thank you for having me. It's so nice to be in a city that I was in for 2015, hosted Eurovision. You are one of Austria's best performing Eurovision entrants, and 4.5 years since you took part in Eurovision. Does it feel like yesterday, or does it feel a lifetime ago?
It feels like yesterday, and it feels like it's a bit of a lifetime ago. It's both at the same time, especially when people remind me, oh no, it's been 4 years, and I'm like, wow, 4 years, it felt like two. But yeah. But on the other hand, I'm also somewhere else now in my development as a musician, so I feel that time has passed. But still, I mean, final night still feels like yesterday.
You came third. It's an amazing result. And you won the jury vote, which is also an amazing thing for any performer at Eurovision.
I did the Eurovision thing as a test to myself, because I was content with producing in the background and coaching singers. And I didn't have to go on stage. I had a lot of experience on stage from years ago. So I was like, oh, I might do that one day again, but I never knew when. And I was like, okay, let's do the Eurovision thing. And if it goes well, then you just come back as a solo artist. Let's see what the universe responds. And coming in third and having that high result in the jury votes was like, okay, let's do this. Let's be a solo artist again.
You said that you felt quite relaxed about the whole process, that you enjoyed Eurovision.
I don't like stress. And my tactic in all these competition situations is like, I just try to remove stress beforehand as much as I can. I love going into these tense situations extremely well prepared because I really love doing everything at like a comfortable 85% when it comes to like an energy, you know. I love to be relaxed.
And you were.
Yeah, I was. Not so much in the when the points were announced, but until then, yes.
People will probably know this, but you were at 2016 and 2017, but in a different capacity. Can you just remind people what your involvement was before you represented Austria?
In 2016, I was Stockholm. I went with Bulgaria, and I was asked to kind of make sure like the whole backing section gels well. That was what I was doing back home a lot, like just arranging harmonies and coaching singers. And they were like, would you mind coming with us? We still have a spare spot, and would be really cool to have somebody with experience. And just came, you know. They kind of lured me into it, kind of, because I knew they were in Eurovision and producing a lot for Eurovision. But I, at that moment in time, I kind of produced and wrote a jazz album, so I was on a totally different spectrum of music. Yeah. And I was like, okay, let's do this. And then kind of the Eurovision bug kind of bit me, and I really, you know, that whole vibe, it really got a hold on me. And the second time around, 2017, it didn't take as much convincing to do it again. And that was for I think Macedonia, Serbia, and Bulgaria. It was a three. Wow. Three country thing. It was a big family that we were there, and also I was there as a backing singer and vocal coach. Yeah.
It's Bulgaria 2016, so it's Polyginova. You come on stage at the end, don't you?
Yeah, we did. I don't know whose idea that was, but I think it matched kind of the message of the song, and yeah, it was a spontaneous off the cuff decision. Yeah.
So then, when you'd done it 2 years in the background, what was the decision in 2018 to be the solo star, to be the front man, to be the artist?
I think 2016 was an eye-opener to me in terms of the range of music that is accepted at Eurovision. I updated my preconceived notions of what kind of music can do well at Eurovision. From that moment on, I was at least open to the idea, and the Austrian broadcaster kept talking to me about it. On final night 2017, when Sobral, the Portuguese singer, won, they came to me and said, next year you gotta do something, you gotta send something. We cannot have it that you keep like being in these successful production teams for other countries other than your own, you know.
And you were like, okay, I guess I can do that.
Yeah, so I felt like obligated to at least do something for my country for a change. Yeah.
Did it give you, I mean, you had confidence already, did it give you even more confidence going forward?
I kind of confronted with me with new problems, actually.
Really?
Yeah, because everybody's listening to what you do next, you know. And once the ball was rolling, there wasn't a lot of time for contemplation. And so I knew, okay, I wanna keep doing this. I'm in it. But then you have to maneuver that extreme amount of attention that you get, which is great. I would not never complain about the attention, but it has also a downside, because like a person like me who wants to explore and just try different things, and not everything has to make sense immediately. Like I would love to make, I don't know, a rock track, and then I would love to make an R&B track, and I would love to be all over the place just to see how it feels. And then, but I have to then go to the interviews and explain my what happened.
Well, you were saying earlier you were doing jazz before you went into Eurovision.
Exactly, very eclectic, and that I have to kind of explain or maybe introduce my audience to. So that was quite interesting, but I think I'm there now, and I kind of found a way to incorporate all my many influences into one cohesive style.
You did do something that makes a lot of people very happy, and you did do a Christmas album.
Yeah, I did at least a part of a Christmas album. Yeah. It was a fraction of it. Now we're releasing another part of it, and then we're gonna finish it off next year, and then we're gonna kind of put it all together in one album. Yeah.
So like a 3-year Christmas project.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the label came to me. I know you've never done this, but would you be open to just recording a few Christmas songs? I'm like, okay, I guess, you know. And then it was really fun.
You have a lot of British family, and obviously next year Eurovision's going to be in the UK. Do you feel kind of allegiance a little bit?
Absolutely. UK is my second home. My dad's from London. I have a bunch of family in London and in Newcastle from my other side, from my mum's side as well. Actually, I don't know if you know, but I almost would have represented the UK with Nobody But You in 2018. It was just that Austria was first in claiming me, so to say. So I was like, okay, my home country and my birth country, of course, comes first. But UK would have been the only other possible choice. So yes, my eyes are always on the UK, and my heart is always bleeding when the UK doesn't do well. It always means something to me, and I really hope that, like, Sam Ryder doing so well last year is like a new trajectory, a new tradition maybe that we can start in the UK, of the UK doing consistently well, because it's crazy to think that a country like that isn't on top, or at least close to the top every year, you know.
It could have been a very different story, because you already had the song ready to go, and it was just a matter of selecting the country.
I wasn't so sure if Austria would get behind me, because I don't know. I heard they have like preferences when it comes to style. They don't like black music so much, and all these rumors kind of swayed me a bit. Maybe I was like, maybe I don't have a chance there, you know. Maybe I'm just the wrong demographic, the wrong music, whatever. So I actually tried to show my song to the BBC first, but then Austria really jumped on it, and I had to say sorry, but my home country goes first. Yeah,
it's a shame that you even had those worries and fears in the first place. Yeah. About your home country, you know, and it's so good that you proved maybe yourself wrong in a way, that there was lots of support for you.
Absolutely, that you couldn't have said it better, because it really was sad that I felt I might not be accepted by my own to that degree, and it really was a transformative and a healing experience to see how much they were, you know. So that really changed also my feeling towards my own home country to a certain degree, yeah.
So that is a massive thing that came out of Eurovision, like the way that you saw your own country.
Yeah, well, absolutely, really. That was way more of a shock, and way more of a thing for me in terms of like impact on my personal life than the publicity and the fame was. Just to say, wow, I'm actually representing my country for once, and it feels good, you know.
So a couple of quick fire questions. Would you contemplate ever doing it again, either for the UK or Austria?
Oh, that's a hard question. I think if I would be ever doing it again, I would have to do it for the UK. First of all, because I kind of almost promised it and then couldn't do it. And also because I have given everything I had for Austria already. I don't want to kind of cancel it out with some other offering or something. I think I really did something there for Austria, and Austria felt it. There's no real use or real meaning in repetition to that degree. Like, it would have to be something new also for me. So if I would do it again, which right now is not really on the table, I would probably try to do it for UK, yeah.
What's your go-to Eurovision song that's not your own?
For me, it all comes back to Jamala 2016, because that really won me over and actually introduced me to the whole contest as a also artistically inclusive event.
Would you ever do a duet with Conchita?
I've sung with her already many times, actually. Us two being the premier Eurovision starters in our history, there's only one more person in the 60-year history who's done that well, but he's not alive anymore, Udo Jürgens. So yeah, so there's a lot of events where we are together in some capacity, and yeah, I like singing with Tom. He's a really nice guy.
Are you going to try and make it to the UK next year for Eurovision to come and watch it?
I think I have to. I would really love to. This is the first time ever since Israel, I would say, that I really feel I have to come by.
With the family in tow.
Exactly, exactly.
It's a family reunion.
Exactly, and I have so much more family that I was aware of. So many cousins I've never met. I have to see them all.
I bet you're sad that it wasn't Newcastle, though. Cesar Sampson, thank you so much for your time. It's great to catch up.
It was my pleasure, really. Thanks, Steve.
As we approach Christmas, do check out his Christmas EP, available across all streaming platforms. I would definitely watch a Christmas Eurovision, wouldn't you? I'm in the mood for it. I know it's still November, but, you know, Christmas is around the corner. Festive spin-off, I'm here for it. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed those chats. Thank you to Cesar Sampson, to Stefania, to Malik Harris, and to Constractor. I always like to catch up with artists after Eurovision to see how they process the event and the experience, because being there for those couple of weeks is such an intense bubble. That is all now from episode one. From this point on, we're going to be looking forward to Liverpool, speaking to the people involved and catching up with some Eurovision legends as well. And remember, between now and May, you're going to hear from every country taking part in next year's finals right here on the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast. Remember to get in touch with me if you've got anything you want to hear. Is there somebody you'd really like to get on the podcast? Do let me know. My socials are in the blurb wherever you're listening to this. Thank you for listening to episode one, and I will catch you very soon. Bye for now.
If you want the latest episode of the Eurovision Song Contest podcast as soon as it drops, then subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.